Okay, let's count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. We are missing 4 more. Okay? So, it's ASU 101, Fall 010. There are many, many sections of it. I assume you're in the right section. At some point of time, I'll be able to actually recognize your faces. I have all your faces. Many of you look like ASU. You want to change your faces a little bit, but that's one way I'll attach names to faces. So I am Rao Kampampati, and there is going to be a home page for this course right there. Right now, if you say Rao ASU 101, Google still has not figured out the index because I just put it there, but by tomorrow or day after, you'll be able to find it. It's not on the blackboard. I don't particularly like blackboard, so I put everything separately on the homepage here. And then we meet once a week for 10 weeks, right? And you get done in October. And then we'll see what we're going to do for those 50 minutes, I think 9:40 to 10:30. Here is the top level overview of what we are supposed to be doing in this course. By the way, stop me anytime you have questions, and I will make you ask me questions a little later, but right now, if you have any questions, just stop me and ask me. Okay. So the goals for this course are supposedly familiarize you with ASU, Fulton, and CSE. I think you are already ahead of the game. If you found 510 in BYENG, you pretty much know ASU, because this is pretty much the only classroom in this building and you still found it. So that's pretty good. Then we are going to teach you, or rather I'm supposed to philosophize to you about how to be successful at ASU, Fulton, and CSE. By the way, the hierarchy, ASU, Fulton, CSE, ASU the university, Fulton is the College of Engineering, CSE is the Computer Science and Engineering Department. And I assume you're all computer science and engineering majors, either CS or computer engineering, one of those two. Okay. In terms of the philosophy, we will either, I'll give you my own homespun wisdom as to how to be successful, which should not amount to much because I was not an undergraduate student at ASU, and so whatever I say may not hold for you. But I also know a lot of undergrad students at ASU who, based on variety of measures, can be seen to be successful. They're still alive and they're still doing good stuff. And so I'll bring a bunch of them at some point of time, and we'll have some sort of a round table with them, and you can ask questions, but, you know, that will be sometime during the semester. Okay. And then you're supposed to get some overview and advice on career paths in CSE. We'll do both, I think, the program paths and career paths, and we'll do some of that. And then the thing that I am hopefully looking forward to, I don't know if any of you are looking forward to it, is to give you some overview lectures on some great ideas in computer science. Okay? And clearly, we only have 10 weeks. I'm not going to be able to cover everything. But one thing that I would like to do, and you know, it will become clear in a minute, is I want you guys to tell me, the 19 of you that are supposed to be here, you tell me what sorts of topics are of particular interest to you in computer science. I understand many of you are just starting here, like it's like your second day, but I assume you have some irrational fascination with some pieces of computer science. Otherwise, why sign up to this major as against some other major? Okay. So if you give me some of those ideas, then I'll try to focus on the overview lectures on things that may be of interest to at least some of you here. Okay. Otherwise, I'll just focus on the stuff that's of interest to me, which is not too bad, but may or may not be what you wanted to hear. Okay. As I said, if you don't give me your own biases, I'll give you my biases as to what are the great ideas in computer science and engineering. Okay. Any questions yet? Okay. Grading. It's not a formal course. Okay. You have to work hard to get a bad grade. And here are some ways you can still work hard to get a bad grade. One is not showing up for the class. The other is not participating, and the third is not answering any blog questions. Okay? If you do those, if you do these religiously, and if I don't know, and if, for example, you still look like ASU by the end of the semester to me, then I would try my best to give you a bad grade. Otherwise, I would have very little incentive. Okay? So that's what you need to do if you want to get a bad grade. I said blog. There is a class blog, and I think about five of you, the last I checked, five of you, all of you got invitations to sign up for the blog, and five of you already signed up. The rest of you should get your act together and sign up. Okay? Why? Because we will basically do a whole bunch of discussions, general discussions on the blog, okay, so that we could use the class time for potentially, you know, things like exciting ideas in computer science. Okay. The way this course will be structured, as you'll see in a minute, is I could spend time here sort of going through the blurbs on ASU, the blurb on Fulton, the blurb on computer science and engineering. That's already four classes done, and I'm way ahead of the game, and you're also way ahead of the game, and we'll be done. Okay. My hope is that we'll have the class time for more technical discussions, hopefully, and then we can use the blog to basically answer lots of other questions that you might have, you know, including where do I go to get my program changed from one side to another side, from computer engineering to computer science, those sorts of things, okay? So right now there's nothing on the blog, but at the end of today's class, you'll already have one simple assignment, which is basically to say something about yourself on the blog, okay? Not your address and phone number, but more about your computer science interests and things like that, okay? We'll get to that in a minute. And then you will be able to post as well as comment on the blog. Nobody who is in this 19th student class can post or comment, but they can read. If you're worried that you're going to, you know, put out a lot of your personal information on the blog and you don't want anybody else to read, even if one of you feels so, just let me know. I'll make the blog unreadable for people other than those who are the contributors. Okay? So that's how it's going to work. Otherwise, right now, it is world readable, but only you guys and myself can write and comment. Okay? Any questions until now? Okay. So today's agenda is fairly easy. We are going to first do introductions, where each of you are going to give your name, why you chose CSE major, any specific areas of CSE that you're of particular interest to you, and then, you know, if you would like to say something, you know, interesting about yourself, and if you can't think of anything interesting about yourself right up front here, you can do the whole thing on the blog again, because this information would be what you would enter as a comment to class introduction message that I'll post, okay? And that'll be the 19 students, and you know, you'll get some idea about who else are hanging around here and why are they in computer science and computer engineering and ASU and Fulton. And then in particular, your answer to this would help me figure out which topics I should give you an overview of over the semester, right? If nobody is interested, let's say, in how search engines work, why should I waste my time talking about that, okay? So that's the sort of thing. Okay, and then after that, if you get done very fast with your introductions, then we'll have an unexpected pop quiz, we will get there. I mean, from there we'll go talk about what that quiz tells us about your background as well as about this course. Okay, question? Yes, sir.
Is this going to be available? I mean, I don't need Blackboard, but anyway.
Yes, as I said, the homepage for the class already has it right now. And furthermore, there will be an audio of this whole thing. Okay, so there's already the introduction and the blurb and ASU, et cetera. And then there'll also be an audio of this available. So speak louder when you introduce yourself. Okay. Questions? Any other questions?
Yeah,
Okay, if not, who's going to start? Why should, how should we start?
Probably.
Okay.
My name is Michelle. The reason I chose this major was because I used to work a lot with computers, so I want to learn more about them. Some specific areas that like interest me in computer science is the security aspect of it, and I like this question.
Great. Okay. By the way, you are introducing yourself to the class, so don't necessarily feel as if you are to introduce yourself to me. I'll know enough about you, hopefully, in 10 weeks. So, yes, sir?
I'm Michael. I chose CS, mainly because I want to program games. I think I'll do games right now. Something interesting. I need to get a haircut.
Okay. Okay, that's very nice. Michael, what's Wentz, your? Michael Wentz. Okay. One of the years. Okay. Good. And what did you say? I'm sorry, I missed. I'm actually trying to make some notes on this.
I
know, haircut I got. That I remember. I'll remember about that, you know. But the other less interesting stuff, like what got you into CS?
I want to do games.
Games, okay. Yeah. It was fun. Very nice. You, sir.
I'm Ivan Montiel. I chose computer science. I'm really interested in how human interaction with computers and how people use them.
Okay.
And I guess something interesting about myself, I play guitar, drums, and piano.
So one idea, as even as I'm thinking about this, by the end of the semester, the last class can be, for example, Michelle cooking for us while he's playing guitar, and I don't know what you're going to do, but you know, at least he will look, I guess, much more presentable in his own eyes. But yes, sir.
All right, I'm Greg. I chose computer science because I took this class in high school and I liked it. And this area would be probably like software programming, and I'm a software engineer.
Next. Yes, I'm sorry.
My name's Nick. I'm interested in computer science, particularly in robotics and like artificial intelligence. I currently work for credit card processor designing their software. So, yeah.
Okay, so I think this party is going to be really rocking. You can get like lots of credit card numbers, right?
Yeah.
But then, okay. Yes, sir.
I'm Brandon. I don't know really why I chose to be this major, but specific areas, I don't know. I think I was going to go into like security.
Okay.
And then something interesting about myself is I played soccer for like 15 or 16 years.
Wow, okay. Next up.
I'm Dylan. Brandon, I don't know really why I chose CSC or CS, just probably because I've always played a lot of games and I've been around computers. Specific areas that kind of interest me are the security part and the next level of computers, like quantum computers.
Okay.
Something interesting about myself, I have a state title in there.
Ooh, okay. What area was it?
The Art Media and Engineering Building.
OME, okay. And who is your advisor there?
Dr. Birchfield.
Who? Birchfield, okay. Yes, sir.
I'm Greg Hewitt.
Greg Hewitt, right? Okay. Next, sir.
I'm Colby. I chose DSC thank you for coming to the in general. I guess the programming course is an interesting thing.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Next.
My name is Miguel. I chose DSC because I'm pretty much a textbook for my family.
What? I didn't hear you.
I chose DSC because I'm pretty much a textbook for all my family. And so, I have something interesting. I'm more interested in the hardware, the social software side.
Okay. You do that all the time or just this year?
Huh?
You just did it this time or you always go on? Wow, okay, nice. And you, sir?
My name's Eric. I chose CFP because it gets me out to keep my laptop outside and computers have air conditioning. And I'm going for information assurance and I like to use it in telecommunications.
Okay. Okay, so as I said, I will put in a little message on the blog, and then say introduce yourself, and you all would just more or less say what you said here as a comment to that. Okay. And that will make sure that you actually know where the blog is and, you know, you'll actually enter a comment. And secondly, it'll also be, I mean, if you didn't hear each other and if I forgot what you said, I'll have something there. Okay? So that's going to be the first minimum assignment for the first week. I can send other things on the email, but this is definitely one. By the way, you have to keep track of your email. You guys are all in computer science and, you know, you need to check if I'm sending you an email. There'll be a class list. And anything that is sent on email will also show up on the blog and in a mail archive. But if you know, you should keep track of it. Okay. So the next part is the unexpected pop quiz, which I'll try to use give my own idiosyncratic introduction to the various parts that we're supposed to talk about. Okay. So first question. Why is ASU an NAU? And what I would like to do is show your hand up if you know the answer, and then I might call on you if you do, I mean one of you. So that way I'll have an idea as to how street smart you kids are here. And if I say kids, you know, pardon me, I am somewhat older than you guys. But you know, that's nothing more than that. Okay, so why is ASU an NAU? Who knows the answer? Okay, so first of all, we need some street smarts, right? Right. So what's NAU, first of all? Northern Arizona University. So why do we need two Northern Arizona universities? ASU is a new American university. If you ever spend time trying to go to www.asu.edu and look at the blurb that ASU has about itself, and I will now try to show it to you. I would not actually, well, I'll open this right now, but so ASU has taken to calling itself the new American university as Northern Arizona University and old American universities that none of us are very interested in. So anyway, these are the blurbs on ASU that I am supposed to show you. But I'm going to just put this up here. You can go and look at what ASU would like to know about its blurb yourself. Okay, but the reason this is sort of interesting is you'll keep hearing this. Okay, some of you, by the way, I noticed are juniors and sophomores. I'm not going to ask you which of you are, but if those of you who are juniors and sophomores still haven't figured out what NAU is, you aren't paying attention. Okay, you need to know the blurb, and you need to know the buzz that's going around. Either that or ASU is failing to get you to actually look at www.asu.edu. So one interesting aspect is that ASU has been trying to kind of distinguish itself from, many other non-new American universities. We can look at this cynically. We can say, yeah, this is just some sort of an advertisement gimmick. But then world is advertisement, right? So there is this thing I once read about, there's a book called 21 Rules of Marketing, 21 Golden Rules of Marketing. And you're saying, I hate marketing. That's why I got into computer science. But you're marketing everything all your life. Okay. And the first rule basically says you should be the first in your category. Okay. And the second rule says if you cannot be the first in your category, make a category in which you are first. That's the second rule, okay? And if you just say 21 rules of marketing on Amazon, this is one of the widely read business Bibles. And that's about the only business book I ever read, actually. So you don't expect, miraculous advice on startups, et cetera, from me. But this, I think, does make sense. And actually, there's a good way to figure out the, get a feel for why this is a very powerful rule. How many of you know who is the first person to have crossed Atlantic solo flying? Of course, you could just be totally only keeping track of people of this week and don't know anything else, but at least some of you should know, I'm hoping, who is the person who crossed Atlantic solo by flight? And I'm sure you can Google it on your cell phones, but I would like to know if any of you know. If you don't know, unfortunately, my second point would not make much sense. Most people happen to know the name Charles Lindbergh. Most people. So my second point isn't really going to make too much sense unless you convince yourself that I knew this, I just forgot the name. Okay? So let's act as if you knew this. My second question is, who is the second person to cross Atlantic solo? No.
Okay.
Nobody remembers. Who is the third person to cross Atlantic solo?
Is that what I know?
Yes. Who is that?
Yeah, Amelia Earhart.
Okay. So that's like a great way. So nobody remembers who crossed Atlantic solo the second. Okay, and yet we do know who crossed Atlantic third. Not because Amelia made an entire category called Women Crossing Atlantic, but she was number one in that category. Okay, so if you keep hearing this bombardment of new American university, and wonder whether or not you should be cynical about it or whether you should try to figure out why they are doing this. One way of being non-cynical about it is if the university gets better press, it's only good for you, right? So in that sense, I guess we are number one new American university because the rest of them still haven't figured out how to be new American university. And there are some rules that some kind of principles that were articulated here. I would basically ask you to read this, and we will maybe discuss this on the blog. Okay. So, for example, if I just read the names that they are mentioning here, of course, focus on the individual. Apparently, other universities don't do that. Global engagement. This is actually an interesting part. ASU does have pretty strong programs right now with a variety of other countries. You know, gone were the days when we thought US was the only country that needs to be counted. You know, it seems as if we have to count other countries now. And so there is a large amount of, you know, connections. For example, there's a lot of students from China who come here and do some of their undergraduate study and go back. And there are people from Mexico who come here and do that. There are several people from Europe who come here and do that. So there is that sort of global engagement that's going on. You might actually find some of these students in some of your classes. This is actually kind of an interesting one. I'm going to kind of focus on some things that I at least seem to understand, and the rest maybe you can explain to me too. Knowledge entrepreneur, if you are interested in just doing, learning the topics and then go work for somebody, that's great. You know, that's a reasonable way to make a living. But ASU is also currently very interested in supporting entrepreneurship. So, and engineering students actually are big beneficiaries of this, because if you have interesting ideas and you want to do a startup, for example, a small company, or at least want to look at a feasibility study, there is like an annual competition for entrepreneurship. I think Edson competition. I can send you a link later on, where you write up your idea, you write up some sort of a business plan as to why you think anybody else. I guess at least one person said they want to write a program that everybody will use, right? Presumably, if you want that, you have to have some idea as to why they would use it and pay for it. And you know, if you write that and if you want to try that, you know, you can take part in this Edson competition. I think it's about $20,000 seed money, and so it might be of interest to people who are involved, who are quite have the entrepreneurial tendency. The ASU itself is actually interested in supporting this. Okay, so societal transformation. The one thing that ASU has gotten pretty big press about is a sustainability initiative, which you probably read about in various papers. And I guess we need, because you know, we're spending all our money on air conditioning, sitting in the desert. And who was the guy who said they're actually getting computer science because they wanted air conditioning? Yes, so you are part of the problem. Basically, you know, there's a large push towards sustainability, and that's like, you know, turned out to be at the right time nationally too, because everybody's actually thinking about how to use our resources probably more wisely and avoid Gulf oil spills and stuff. So there is an area which you probably never heard of, which already started having conferences, called green computing. And this is not Steve Jobs' green computer. It's just green computing. That means computing with less resources. And so, for example, low power computing. And in fact, one of the biggest sinks of energy right now is what? And is these server farms, huge server farms that need a large amount of air conditioning. Okay. And so people are interested in figuring out how to reduce the energy footprint. And if you happen to be interested in that sort of a thing, and if you, in your high school, for example, are both interested in mechanical engineering-ish aspects, physics sorts of aspects, and now you are interested in computer science too, there's a great way of putting them together, okay? So that's sort of connecting what we are doing, I guess, to societal transformation, and in general, that's also sort of use inspired research. We'll talk more about research in a minute, but essentially do research that would be useful by somebody, you know, for somebody else, as against just get you a good job, which is in itself useful, but it'll also be good if you're looking at problems besetting the society. Okay. So that's the first question. Any questions on that? Second, why are all ASU 101 sections capped at 19 students? Okay, one person. Who else knows the answer? 19, is it because it's a prime number or an even number? I'm looking at your faces carefully to see whether when I said even you had the same expression or not. yes, so, wise man.
Just to keep the average class size down.
Exactly. So, that's the legend at least. So, it turns out that all ASU 101s are pegged at the magical number of 19, which all of us know is a lucky number, and the real reason it's lucky is that US News and World Reports, that paragon of academic ranking, looks at the number of classes below the magic number 20, okay, that a university offers, okay. And so we could, for example, take CSE 101 and say it'll only be less than 20, or we could actually have a huge number of ASU 101 classes, which all of you are asked to take, and for I guess one third of the semester, and they're all 19 people. You know, you could not have gotten into this class, you know, even though there are more chairs, okay. Now, that legend is obviously has a cynical interpretation. That means the whole thing is being done to impress US News and World Report, which doesn't seem to be all that impressed anyway. Actually, all magazines, it's like, it's a loser's game trying to impress magazines because they're all going out of business, right? I mean, Newsweek is folding up. US News and World Report, probably the only thing it has left is this academic rankings and various universities buying the annual ranking issue. That's the only way it's actually probably in business. So we could think about it from that point of view, but let me tell you a few reasons why this might be interesting. ASU is a public university. What's the largest class any of you are in currently?
400.
What?
400.
400 students. Okay. And which class is that?
ALA
100. Okay, and anybody else can beat him? That's it? 400, man, he's winning. Okay, so in general, public universities, for a variety of reasons, wind up having large classes. We'll talk about whether or not that makes sense. We can philosophize about it. That's the reality, okay? You rarely ever get any feel for who else is taking classes with you and what are they doing and what is the what's the instructor actually trying to do other than just teach these classes and so on. And so this was, you could view this as a way for you to figure out in a smaller group, if you don't take any other classes which are small, which I believe won't be the case. Most of the four-level courses, at least in computer science and engineering, four-level courses are about between 40 and 80. Okay, three-level courses are between 60 and 80, depending on the course. Okay, and then if you start taking 494s, there's a whole series of courses called 494s. Which is actually a very good thing that this department does that doesn't get done in most other universities that I'm aware of. In general, for graduate students, there's always courses that are at the bleeding edge. You know, apart from the normal courses, they'll also make courses up which talk about the areas that are currently hot. Okay, and in ASU, for example, those courses go with 591 as the number. So the same 591 number would be given, but different titles for different courses. CS department here has similar thing for undergraduates, 494. In fact, one of the courses that I really enjoy teaching is a 494 course on information integration, retrieval, and mining. Okay, and that's a kind of a course which, if you wind up taking those courses, those will count for your program of study. And they are there in hardware, they are there in software, they are there in security. And if you take those, you would probably have much smaller classes. You'll have about you know, 20, 30 people. Okay, so there are smaller classes you will take, but before you get up there, and if you lose interest because you have too many students surrounding you, then hopefully these classes could be useful, and you will get some idea of where the university is going, what kinds of opportunities are there, etc. And another thing is, in a public university, normally there are lots of students, and you don't necessarily know if you have a question on your program of study, other than just going and standing in the advising office, you know, is there some faculty member that you won't go and talk to? Okay, you may or may not realize this, but the deal is that since you signed up for my section of ASU 101, until you graduate from ASU, you can come knock on my door anytime and ask questions, general programmatic questions. So I'm sort of your default advisor. Okay, if you don't like me, you don't have to show up. But if you do, then if you needed somebody to talk to about, you know, whether I should go this direction or this direction, and you want opinions, I have lots of them, and I'll provide them to you free of cost. Okay, so that's another non-cynical reason for getting interested in ASU 101. And the third thing is, you are, most of you are in the first year, you probably are going to hack away for grades in every other course. Here, we won't have much pressure, but if you give me a chance, I'll teach you very challenging stuff, okay? But I won't test you on them. And how much better can life get, right? I mean, so I'll just keep talking, and I won't test you whether or not you completely understood it. With less pressure, you might be able to get an overview of some of the areas in computer science, and then can decide which courses you might want to take later. Okay, so that's regarding why 101 is 19 students, and why we might be interested in doing it anyway. I know that none of you are doing it for the love of it, right? Because you're all forced to take it. But I'm hoping that we'll, since we are here anyway, we'll find something useful to do. Third question. What are the research areas of your instructor? Of course, the instructor is narcissistic, but there is a bigger point to this. Who knows? I guess nobody knows, right? Well, I work in two areas, artificial intelligence and information integration, but that's beside the point. The point that I would like to make is, if you want to succeed in a university, so if you're going on a date with somebody, okay, blind date, and people just give you their name, in the era of Google, won't you Google them? Don't you find out where you're wasting your time, you know, even for just one dinner? And you're going to waste 10 hours, you know, 10 breakfast times with me. And you need to figure out who you're signing up for, okay? And I will send you some actual links. I think there's this one little thing that I came across one time called Harvard Guide to Happiness. It's one of the older universities you may or may not have heard of. It's not a new American university, but they were at some point of time trying to, president of Harvard was trying to figure out what determines whether or not undergraduates are generally happy overall. Okay, and so he asked the statistics department to go and do an actual study on figuring out which undergraduate students seem to be happy, which are not, and then the statisticians have come up with a set of features that the happy students, you know, the students who are happy with their university experience, seem to share, okay? Number one of them, it turns out, is that they knew some faculty members by the time, every year they knew at least one faculty member that they could knock their door and then go talk to them. Okay, now in the era of Google and the Open University and video lectures everywhere, okay, if there is any use for you to show up to a class and listen to me drone on, okay, it has to be because you have to ask yourself, what am I getting out of this? Okay, you need to understand what the faculty members are doing, what kinds of teaching do they do, whether their research areas are of interest to you, And you know, you don't need to necessarily make an, a complete opinion, but be a little more aggressive. You know, use Google to search for things other than Britney Spears, okay, or whoever is you're searching right now, okay. And it'll help me improve my page rank, I'm pretty sure, but it'll also give you an idea as to who you are taking courses with, okay? This, you know, I'm supposed to teach you how to be successful, and I'm not saying that figuring out what my homepage says about me is the main reason, I mean, main criteria to be successful, but in general, figuring out who your teachers are is a pretty important criteria for your success. Otherwise, skip classes, do video lectures, and you know, you're just as happy. Okay, I'm, you know, don't tell higher ups that I told you this. But you know, I would like you to pay tuition, etc., etc. But if you're taking a 400 people class, right, what are you getting out of it? And if you don't know the teacher from Adam and Eve, what exactly are you doing when you're showing up for the class? And you could say they didn't talk to you, but you guys also should spend some time on figuring out who the teachers are, what courses are worth taking, and again, I tell people who ask me for course advice, first figure out who is teaching it. If you're doing a classroom teaching, and classroom thing, first figure out who is teaching it. You know, if you're into security, and the person teaching security is known to be like a boring teacher, okay, you probably should think twice about registering for that class, seriously. You know, maybe you should just listen to it on the video lecture. Okay, so that's one, I think, very important issue that I am surprised. I hope at least one of you, or two of you, have said you know who the instructor is. But I hope you know this course is out. But for the other ones that you're going to take, figure out who the people are behind the courses. Okay, questions? Okay, I would not do that. What's I power I? You didn't expect Spanish Inquisition, did you? How many of you know Monty Python's Spanish Inquisition speech? Yes. See? You should have expected some sort of a Spanish Inquisition. I said unexpected quiz. What's I power I? What am I talking about? What's I? What?
Square root of -1.
Yes, square root of -1, and all I want to know is what is square root of -1 by square root of power square root of -1. That's I power I. Okay, now let's just see, is that going to be a complex number, real number, imaginary number? Say it loud. Many of you have done math, right? You're in computer science, you're in engineering. And you're still in the first year of your undergraduate study, first class pretty much for most of you, right? And the worrisome thing is in the beginning CS courses, you tend to think math that you learned has no particular use to you in computer science. Okay, beginning CS courses, you tend to confuse programming, computer programming, from computer science, okay? A computer programmer is like the APS electric technician. That's a useful job, but they don't need to know how things work necessarily, other than how to repair a few things, okay? A computer scientist sometimes would, of course, you need to be able to program, but you need to also know, you know, what sorts of programs would be efficient, you know, and what's the theory behind coming up with a solution for a particular problem. Okay, and in doing that, all the math that you learned plus more would be useful, even though you would forget most of it by the time you'll actually come to the third level or fourth level courses when it's actually needed. And this, I brought it up mostly to actually make that point. I will actually leave you to answer this question on the blog. Okay, I won't tell you right now. Figure this out. You know, it's a cute idea, right? I mean, imaginary number, power imaginary number. You guys heard about this stuff. If not, how did you get into engineering, first of all, right? And you may not have just looked at this, and you should figure this out, okay? And the bigger issue is not so much that if you know this answer, answer to this, you would be a successful computer scientist. But if you slowly forget all your math, you would be an okay computer programmer, but not a good computer scientist. And when I say computer scientist, computer engineer too. Okay? Okay, the last one, and it's sort of related, I think. How many pairwise comparisons do I need to do to check if a sequence of n numbers is sorted? I give you 10 numbers. And you're writing a program. You said all of you know programs, right? So, you know, you're trying to figure out whether the sequence I gave you is sorted. You know what sorted means, right? So it's either in increasing or decreasing order. You know, pick one. Okay? Let's assume increasing to make life simple. So what is the number of comparisons do you need to do to check if the sequence of numbers is sorted? What?
The least efficient would be n. I'd be checking each number.
Yeah, so, yeah, what do you mean each number? So I have a sequence.
Well, you can check if the given number is smaller than the actual number.
Okay, so I have k numbers, n1 up to nk, right? And that's the sequence I gave you. How would you go about writing a little program for this?
n minus 1
comparisons. If you do more than n minus 1 comparisons, you should hit yourself in the back pretty strongly, okay? But the worst case, you will do n minus 1 comparisons. What's the luckiest that you can ever get? Given a sequence, you'll be able to answer this query with what least number of comparisons. So n minus 1 is, you know, the maximum you will ever have to do. What's the least you can ever do and give an answer for my question, which is this sequence sorted or not? Least, one, who said one? Yeah, what would happen? How do you figure that out?
You check the first two numbers and it's like two and then one.
Mm-hmm. So there are many properties where once the property is locally broken, you cannot make it globally right again. Like once you're dead, you're dead. Okay? So if I say make sure, Rao, that by the end of the semester, nobody died. Okay? And if one of you have already, you know, with no mistake from me, sort of passed away, I have lost it. At that point, I have lost that goal because I don't know how to bring people back to life. Okay, and similarly, in the sorted sequence, if these two already are not sorted, there is no reason to check anything else further. You agree? So the best you'll ever do is one comparison. The worst you'll ever do is n minus one comparison. Many of you can write a program for this. Not all of you have thought about what this program is doing. How long is it taking, under what conditions? Okay, that's computer science again. Okay, so for example, for this, you are saying it's one comparison minimum, and minus one maximum, and so worst case that you are interested in is n minus one, that's normally said order of n comparisons. N minus one is close to n, and n is large. Okay, thinking about programs this way, this is computer science. Writing a program is computer programming, but you need to be able to think about this. The last thing I want you to, actually this is also a good one, I probably won't have time. What major CS theorem did somebody claim to have proved recently? Anybody know? P equal to NP. Yes, no, what? What did they say? Why is P equal to NP interesting? We should talk about this at some point of time. Now figure out, you know, go back and figure out why P equal to NP is such a big deal. And did the guy who proved it, did they say P is equal to NP or not equal to NP? And should you care? That's computer science again. Okay? And actually one thing that I want you to think about, and I'll send you all of these on the blog, and I'd like to see you comment on the pieces that you have, you know, thoughts on. If I know that given a sequence, I can check whether it is sorted or not with the worst case of n minus 1 comparisons, here is a way I can sort a sequence. If you give me a sequence, I can sort it this way. Take the sequence, find a permutation. How many of you remember permutations from the math? Okay. How many permutations are there? For n, there are just n factorial permutations. Right? And then for each sequence, you check if it is sorted or not using this other program. And when you find the first sequence that is sorted, you're done. That's your sorting program. Think about why this is a good or a bad idea. Some of you probably already know, but we need to talk about it. Okay, I'll stop here. We'll come back next class. Hopefully, we'll have more communication over the blog before that. And, you know, we'll discuss some of these things and a few more technical things next time. Okay.